Thank you, Antonia, for this introduction. So as you said, actually, many things that I'm planning to talk about, but basically it was the invitation to start from didactic exhibition led me in different directions, of which some actually concern the exhibitions, but many are also more about the general cultural and ideological landscape in which this introduction of abstraction after the Second World War was happening in Yugoslavia. And all this with some view what it can have to do with the moment we are in. So, broadly, this talk will deal with some questions of Yugoslav socialist modernism within general post-war social progress and its own vision of modernity. It will examine issues of artistic and cultural production in relations to global cultural scene, especially the story of abstraction, and also the question of the influence of Cold War policies on cultural policies of the socialist Yugoslavia. Okay, thank you. Is it better? Thanks. Why talking about Yugoslavia now? Its violent destruction just recently got its gruesome epilogue with the suicide of the convicted war criminal in the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. And this story alone would suffice to suggest that there is nothing in Yugoslav history worth remembering, that Yugoslavia was a social experiment, so as it is often called, destined to fail from its very beginnings. Indeed, the dominant position of post-socialism within new national histories that emerged on the ruins of Yugoslavia is a total trivialization of the whole history of Yugoslavia, as from the beginning wrongly conceptualized and even dangerous enterprise, and at the same time, trivialization of its emancipative effects of the socialist concept of culture. The epoch of Federative Republic of Yugoslavia, as the country was called in the period we are dealing with, today is experienced mostly in two opposing ways, either as epoch of relative economic prosperity and social security, or as an epoch of monolith ideology, repression of political freedoms and economic unsustainability. Both of these imaginations are consequences of specific processes of political and economic transition after the end of socialism, that failed to grasp Yugoslavia's social existence in which contradictions and antagonisms were aspects of social dynamics. In relation to theory of culture, a period of transition was dominated by rhetoric of totalitarian paradigm, whose effect is prevention of every attempt of political action in a victorious vision of post-political tolerance and post-historical normalization, with cultural memory, as Boris Buden argues, that only remembers in order to forget communist experience of political engagement. This position is a part and parcel of so-called post-communist condition that reduces political antagonisms to cultural identity and treats former communist countries exclusively as a cultural location that still needs to catch up with the course of cultural modernization. Culturalization acts both as motivator of social changes, their visualizations, conceptualization and articulation, and as a form of social passivization. In that sense, the process of culturalization of politics in the Cold War is also a theme at the center of the exhibition around which we gathered here. And since the end of the Cold War, this process only escalated. Why then is it so hard to imagine nowadays some social and cultural political experiments enacted in socialist Yugoslavia, like elements of communism in healthcare, education, ideology, and even in distribution of goods like living spaces? Economic and political results in the first two decades of Yugoslavia, of socialist Yugoslavia, were truly immense and revolutionary. Full independence of the state, full employment, free social services, expansion of educational system, and decisive emancipation of women. Some 100,000 women joined partisan movement in the Second World War, and through it gained political and social self-confidence, especially through establishment of anti-fascist women front. which will admittedly later be increasingly subordinated to the party and finally dismantled in 1953. Still, gains in women's legal equality, education and employment were real, though in the later decades, especially since late 60s, only independent feminism will react to a re-establishment and strengthening of patriarchal relations. Victory in the war against fascism and the realization of socialist revolution in politically and economically backward country, growth of production forces and of living standards, first urbanization and development of working and intellectual classes, establishment of self-management in 1950, and strong role in the movement on non-alignment are some of undisputed gains realized in this period. Though by the beginning of the 60s, the country leaped from very underdeveloped agrarian society to industrial society with mid-level income. Along the lines of the enlightening character of the socialist order, Yugoslav investments in science and accessible education were abundant. They generated new cultural needs and shaped a new shared notion of modernity and the collective desire to bring it to reality. Darko Suvin speaks about huge enthusiasm for country's liberation through partisan movement organized on the basis of people's fronts and of enthusiasm for the post-war reconstruction in a country ravaged by destruction that in the war lost more than a million people whose average age was 22. Self-management was the key step and achievement of that struggle. After the breakup with Stalin, which will be often mentioned, and for now we locate it in 1948, Yugoslav leadership learned that, as one of its leading theorists, Edward Kardel, claimed, they should steer away from any deformation of Communist Party that identifies itself with the state of police apparatus. This was followed by the return to Marx's early writings, with the reconsideration of the Paris Commune legacy, re-evaluation of the October Revolution, and the espousal of Lenin's notion of withering away of the state. Put together, concepts and ideas that served as a theoretical framework of the self-managing socialism provided an authentic modern political project which marked a real and irreversible detachment from the Eastern Bloc. The breakup with Stalin also meant the imposition of a complete economic blockade. Without the Soviet help, the entire process of the post-war reconstruction had to be stopped, which brought Yugoslavia in an almost desperate situation. During the following years, from 1948 to 1954, the Yugoslav Communist Party was forced to improve contacts with the West, to re-examine and redefine Yugoslav relations with the neighboring countries, and to decide on the model of its future political and social organization. Marshall Plan, denied in 1947 in the name of solidarity with Soviet Union, was accepted in 1951, and Yugoslav detachment from Moscow resulted in American help, including loans. Because of the country's strategic interest in the period of Cold War, these loans were not conditioned by usual foreign ownership and domination, but enabled the country to develop and experiment with self-management, first through establishment of workers' councils in the industry, and later in education and healthcare. On the international level, the country enacted experiment of non-alignment, a bloc of third world countries acting for peace and independence against both Cold War blocs. Some 10 years ago, with curatorial collective WHW, we worked intensively on socialist modernism, as it looked like a way to intervene into mainstream pre-2008 post-socialist normalization. We did projects on modernist sculptor Vojin Bakić, most famous for his monuments to partisan struggle, and here is one, very late one from 1969, which at the time was the biggest abstract monument anywhere in Europe. Or this is a monument in Petrova Gora, both monuments to partisan struggles. So Vojin Bakić, who was also a very important protagonist of early abstraction in sculpture. and this is one of his very early attempts to go out of socialist realism canon, and with the sculpture of Marx and Engels, which was rejected for a public monument in Belgrade in 1953, which was rejected at the time, but it made an important milestone. We also, at that time, worked, as Antonia mentioned, around the didactic exhibition, which is presented here, and also worked with Belgrade Museum of American Art, which is also presented here. Our basic claim was that abstraction could have gone the other way if it were not depoliticized by instrumentalized claim of its autonomy and relations to freedom. We claimed that artists who forged abstraction in post-war Yugoslavia were neither beautiful souls who consented that their works be utilized on behalf of the need for a political breakup with Stalin, nor were they modernists by party command, and that abstraction was not a case of manipulation and instrumentalization of modernist tendencies in art, but a clear and consistent cultural policy of the country. These artists were invested into changing the existing and building a new world, and as modernists, they were necessarily leftists, anti-fascists, socialists, and even communists. In the meantime, since 10 years ago we worked around this, suppression of communism as historical fact, annihilation of communist past with all its intellectual and political complexities, in historical consciousness of post-communism, has become a fully normalized. Can we even speak of socialist modernism as a particular phenomenon? One can assert that precisely modernism, as the cultural logic of the period of industrial modernization, was the main cultural form of the Yugoslav socialist society. The adjective socialist in the phrase socialist modernism hence primarily determines social and political conditions that serve as a foundation to this process of industrial modernizations. The conditions that attributed important symbolic, political, and educational meaning to culture and art. Adjective Yugoslav is also problematic within dominant revisionist national art histories. No matter how determined by the specific cultural urban climate and the local cultural scene, all the art scene protagonists of the time were constituents of the broader social scene of the socialist Yugoslavia. Yugoslav culture was neither an attempt at establishing a new supranational culture, nor an antithesis or negation of the separate development in Yugoslav Republic. It was based on the identical institutional structure in relation to the centers of political power, which in accordance with the dominant policy provided a social framework for production, reception, and evaluation of art on the entire state territory. Uniform, rigid, and uncritically taken over from the Soviet Union in the early post-war years, it will greatly complicate things in the years when a doctrine of socialist realism was dethroned. The understanding of this story should also discard the cliché about the power of socialist realism in the country and the struggle for modern art as an opposition to the official Communist Party orientation. We rather choose to speak about the overlapping of political and artistic tendencies within the development of socialist modernization. At that time, the modernist universalism was still truly firmly related to proletarian internationalism. Even socialist realism was an expression of the political, industrial, and social modernization, and one of the faces of modernity in Europe, not only in Yugoslavia. Besides, in the Yugoslav context, the term socialist realism has certain specific traits. There is a pre-war history of critical and revolutionary art, and there is a history of leftist polemics about socially involved art, but also the practical example of the members of the group Zemlya, Earth, who were very much influenced by Neue Sachlichkeit. And they connected social motifs in painting and modernist form in architectural practice. The existence of a strong partisan art production during people's liberation struggle complicates the situation as well, as democratic outburst of partisan art was actually the position from which socialist realism had the strongest opposition. Contrary to reactions in other Eastern Bloc countries, it was not the issue of politically motivated imposition of a new doctrine that presented the primary reason for resistance, but the fact that socialist realism actually degraded already accomplished results in the revolutionary transformation of Yugoslav art and culture. Socialist realism was a doctrine only in 1945 to 48, during the shortest period in Yugoslav history when the country of the indigenous communist movement became the best Soviet ally. The Soviet modernization model became the dominant model of choice. What happened in 48 to change that? Shortly, Information Bureau of Communist Countries, an office established in 47 with a seat in Belgrade that gathered all the communist parties of the East except Albanian and East German, and two of the West, French and Italian, organized to replace Comintern, International Organization of Communist Party under Soviet control, which was closed in 43 to appease Western allies. So this Information Bureau, so-called Inform Bureau, issued in 48 a resolution through which Yugoslavia was thrown out of the Inform Bureau and healthy forces in the country were recommended to clean the situation. This open attempt to strip Yugoslav revolutionary government of its powers, provoked in fact by Yugoslav disobedience to Soviet dictate in continuing aiding guerrilla in Greece, this dramatic early theater of Cold War, as we know, against demands of Stalin, who just recently agreed with Churchill not to support the communists in Greece, did not work out as planned because Tito received strong support from his party and from the people. The shock of this break resulted in what Suvin calls miraculous combination of revolutionary freshness and Comintern sternness, and whose main effect, according to him, was formation of two opposing mentalities, both in the general population and within the party, liberatory and authoritarian. And these opposing tendencies, or mentalities, will continue to clash throughout the country's existence. At the same time, this clash rehabilitated democratic forces formed during the revolution and encouraged development of self-management. In the next decade, it will transpire that self-management did not spread from the field of economy to the sphere of political decision-making. And in the long run, it encouraged competition and strengthening of elites, which paradoxically was the accusation of Inform Bureau. In a letter that they issued, among other things, there is the following warning. Yugoslav party is easing into rotten opportunist theory of growing of capitalist elements into socialism, which, in a twist of history, proved to be not so far from the truth. In any case, a lot of Stalinist baggage was discarded for the benefit of the whole country, and what the mood in the country was is well exemplified by a very famous caricature of Stalin portrait in Marx's office by Zhuko Jumhur, first published in 1950 and later republished also internationally. It was kind of a token also. Yugoslavia forged its independence from Stalin, but de-Stalinization will be a constant theme. In the rest of this talk, I will speak in somewhat more details, let's say, of several episodes of socialist modernism without any hierarchy between them, and using them as a case studies in themselves, but also as indicative of the broader social conditions. Episode 1, Don Quixote against himself. Introduction of abstraction in some ways continued in a so-called momentous clash of the left on the left that in various stages endured as a materialist praxis and not as academic problem in Yugoslav communist movement for more than two decades, since late 20s to early 50s. Stanko Lasić, one of the biggest authorities on the subject, describes it summarily as a clash between two forms of total transcendence that dominantly obsessed left intellectuals, art and revolution. As he writes, whatever we think of any one individual participant of the debate, one thing is certain, they were all obsessed with salvation. Either they lived their ideal directly or they were Stoics. There were no cynics or bureaucrats among them. This he wrote in a book that first really unpacked the clash on the left in 1970. In the 30s, so we should keep in mind when I mention Lasić that it's actually rather early, it's 1970. I don't know how it would be, how he would approach it later. In the 30s, orientation and general politics and strategy of Yugoslav Communist Party depended on Comintern's positions, although ultimately everything depended on Soviet Bolshevik Party. This politics developed from 1930 Kharkov Conference of International Organization of Revolutionary Writers, which propagated art in the service of political pragmatism, only to be revised and changed at the first Soviet Writers' Congress held in Moscow in 1934, when Stalin coined the famous phrase on artists as engineers of souls, but analysis and arguments of inaugurated doctrine of socialist realism was given by Bukharin. In his speech, like in the speeches of other delegates at that Congress, like André Malraux and others, socialist realism was not given as a dogma, but as a creative method supposed to mobilize artistic freedom. Bukharin argued for dreams, Malraux for deepening of psychological insights. But this approach will soon ossify into a stern doctrine. A year later, at the International Writers' Congress for the Defense of Culture in Paris in 1935, Aragon will maximally narrow down the meaning of socialist realism and bring it closer to former political pragmatics. In the same year, Breton, whose vision of unity of art and revolution will be the only real revolutionary artistic force next to Stalinist vision, broke up with French Communist Party. In those years, Yugoslav Party transformed into a Stalinist type of party with monolithic unity of thought and action and desire to suppress any ideological deviations, as they were called. This process was completed by 1938 when magazine Pechat, stamp, appeared, initiated and led by Miroslav Krleža, the most respected non-party leftist intellectual and writer, who will until the end of his life in 1981 play the role of arbiter in cultural matters and who consistently opposed subordination of art to revolution, emphatically arguing for a possibility of their harmonious unity. In this magazine, Marko Ristić, one of the most prominent members of Belgrade's surrealist circles, published his essay A Dream and Truth of Don Quixote, which will turn him into traitor and revisionist. In post-war years, he was the prominent cultural diplomat and Yugoslav ambassador in Paris in the 40s. But in 1938, he was a traitor. Incidentally, he also declined to take part in the Congress for Cultural Freedom in 1952 in Berlin. In his letter to Roger Caloat, in which he explains reasons for his refusal, he writes, and I will quote at length, "If I were to try to summarize the motives and elements of the disagreement, the presentation of which would be unavoidably lengthy, I would tell you that I find it unacceptable to contrast, as is done by the organizers of all the conferences, exhibitions and gatherings held under the auspices of the Congress for Cultural Freedom, to contrast a priori totalitarianism and the West, thus equating also a priori the West and creative freedom. There is no doubt that Stalinism is totalitarianism of the worst kind, and that there can be no discussion, regardless of what Aragon thinks, of any meaningful artistic output, creative freedom under a dictatorship of a bureaucratic caste. However, in my opinion, it would be wrong to compare the West as a metaphysical entity, as an incarnation of freedom, to this totalitarianism which, in this simplistic antinomy, inevitably encompasses, along with Stalinist totalitarianism, everything that is not the West. And I leave you to imagine everything that that entails. Totalitarian, that is, colonial nations, totalitarian Yugoslavia, totalitarian China. Individual artistic creation is free in the West, that is evident. But that fact and equating the West with creative freedom is a world apart. And the colonial nations suffering under the boot of the West are an aspect and a reality of that world. Whether desired or not, the term West also includes the term Francoist Spain and the term colonialism, while the term totalitarianism, since its characteristics are in no way specified in the language of the Congress for Cultural Freedom, inevitably also includes everything that denies totalitarianism, that fights against it on the most difficult and decisive terrain, Yugoslavia, for example. End of quote. He passionately refuses identification of communism with totalitarianism, just like in the 30s, he refused to follow dictates of Soviet political pragmatics. In his essay on Don Quixote, he argues for the humanism of the struggle through which the poet could affirm his fidelity to poetry. He compares Spanish people to Don Quixote because they are mad from ideals. But unlike the Spanish knight who stays in the world of his subjective hallucinations, Spanish people fight to transform reality to reach the level of madness and ideals. Ristić introduces a principle of doubt in the abstract totality of art and revolution, which he deems useful for a kind of revolution he desires to be a part of. For this doubt, he was punished. This is what On a Dream and Truth of Don Quixote wrote another revolutionary, Ottokar Kershovani, who will be executed in March 41, along with many other prominent communist intellectuals in retaliation for partisan activities. So he writes on Don Quixote. We decidedly reject his concept of Don Quixote as false, anti-historical and reactionary. We refuse his understanding of the meaning of Spanish people's struggle. We refuse his understanding of poetry and role and tasks of poets as non-realistic, irrational, and antisocial. We refuse his doubts in real progress of mankind. We believe in the big historical social function of art and poetry without renouncing their specificities. How much passion is invested in Spanish drama in the 30s, unlike today, when Spanish experiments with self-government and enacted democracy have been hijacked by partisan interests of political elites, which utterly fail to mobilize political passions outside national borders. Lasić concludes that the drama in the clash with Ristić and magazine Pecet, which ended up with the defeat of the magazine line and with the strengthening of party unity, which ultimately proved to be the right choice in facing the fascism, eventually helped communist intellectuals to change after the break with Stalin. But their search for humanist soul, as Lasić called it, will last for a long time. Don Quixote will reappear in 1961 animated film, Don Quixote, by Vladimir Kristal, an artist active in several artistic fields, prominent painter, and one of the founders of group Exit 51 that brought together representatives of geometric abstraction. I will talk about them later. In the 60s, Kristal left for Germany, where he died in 2004, and there is a legend that he apparently never came back to Yugoslavia. In Don Quixote, he made innovative animation that uses abstract picture and sounds to narrate a story in the film composed as a collage of time, rhythmical movements, and geometrical pictures. Incidentally, his post-war way to abstraction had a history in agitprop during the Second World War when he was a very young artist. These are some of his agitprop posters. The fact that abstraction was occasionally still vilified obviously did not prevent turning it into an eminent sign of modernity. But as late as 63, in his speech in Sarajevo, Tito argued against abstraction as pseudo-art that started to prevail and concluded, everything could stay as it has always been, but state money would not be spent on abstraction anymore. It is surely symptomatic how he tried to settle the argument with money. But in the end, the state money was spent on abstraction, just because by then, abstraction was entrenched in the mainstream like everywhere else. Episode 2. The whole country had only 200 trucks. In the country that had only 200 trucks, as Darko Suvin quotes, and his meticulous research could be trusted, in the field of visual art, the most dramatic breakup with socialist realism and all pre-war traditions came about with the group Exit 51 that appeared in 51 with a rationalist, neoconstructivist vision of modernity that advocated collective progress, social mission of art and imagination of culture as the place of a meeting between artistic thinking, relations of production, and continual education. And they referred to the programmatic predecessors of Bauhaus and constructivist avant-garde. Members of the group Exit 51 were painters Kristel, Rašica, Picelj, Aleksandar Srnec, and architects Vjenceslav Richter, Bernardo Bernardi, Zdravko Bregovac, Zvonimir Radić, and Vladimir Zaharović. Very male group. The very title of the group, Exit, abbreviated from Experimenter Atelier, makes apparent a desire to take art in the broader field of social experiment. Exit 51 has been publicly and declaratively established through the act of reading their manifesto on December 7th in 1951, in which they specifically asked for abolishing frontiers between fine art and applied art, standing on the positions of progress, collective aspect of work, importance of conditions and social context of artistic practice, of experimentation, synthesis of all artistic forms, and free confrontations of opinions. Exit is the case in point in which the claim that within the general trend of the modernization of society, modern, which means up or abstract art, was not only silently tolerated, but also, at least to a certain extent, stimulated by the enlightened members of the party. Starting already in 1948, the future members of Exit, Picelj, Richter, and Srnec, enacted a series of state commissions, primarily pavilions for large international exhibitions, representative projects of the young new country that saw and wished to present itself as contemporary, modern, and progressive. These pavilions, those in Stockholm and Vienna in 1948 or 9, or in Brussels in 1948 and 1958, as well as the exhibition setups, like those of the exhibition Highway of Brotherhood and Unity, shown in Zagreb and Belgrade in 1950, or exhibition Industry of Democratic Republic of Germany presented at Zagreb Fair, or exhibition Books in Croatia, this is from Books in Croatia, abolished the division between the fine pure art and applied art, stripping visual language of any literary ballast and realizing total plastic fact. The only exhibition of Exit 51 took place in 1953 in Zagreb and later in Belgrade. This is a Books in Croatia exhibition, and this is the only exhibition of paintings that they did in 53. It was the exhibition of paintings, and paradoxically, today, the most concrete traces of Exit 51 are within the painting, which in many ways was secondary for programmatic intentions of artistic synthesis. a question whether painting was understood only as a model, one component of the unachieved wholeness and synthesis, or it had autonomous and finalized value within certain art system, still remain open. For our contemporary understanding of achievements and importance of Exit 51, the very paintings and aesthetic objects are not of the primary concern. Rather more important is specific ethics and politics of the group. Exit was not important only as the producer of art objects, but primarily as the producers of certain discourses about art and its social role in the post-war society. For understanding of their practice, more important than a breakup with socialist realism is the breakup with the traditional determinants of visual arts and the bourgeois notion of art autonomy. And this is possibly why the conflict around their practice was not between party-orchestrated socialist realism versus modernism, but between the bourgeois notion of art versus socially involved possibility of modern abstract art. Exit could also be attributed with the responsibility for innovative educational concept of the traveling exhibition, first didactic exhibition, that between 57 and 62 toured 15 cities and was attended by thousands of viewers. Its popularity is a sign of importance accorded to vision of modernity, which in those years started to be identified with abstraction. It was an illustration of a story about the development of abstract art, which included prints of André Bloch, Edgar Pied, and Victor Vasarely, borrowed from Parisian gallery Denise René, one work by Piet Mondrian that through some strange ways found its place in Belgrade Museum. And in the meantime, typewritten translations of foreign texts, reproductions from books with clippings from art magazines and photographs from personal archives, they produced altogether 92 cardboard panels of modest dimensions. Their interpretation of the development in modern art after 35 starts with Alfred Barth's hypothesis on abstraction as a logical and inevitable outcome of the development of modern art. And in their narrative, it ends with a neoconstructivist vision of modernity. Some critics claim that Exit simply does not bring anything new or avant-garde, that it is an eclectic movement based on a repetition of certain solutions of geometric abstraction en vogue in Paris at that time. But as Dejan Kršić proposes, Exit's references to the Bauhaus, the steel, and the Soviet avant-garde should be regarded as a selection of one's ancestors, as positioning in a diachronic arc of development of international modern art, not as a mere repetition of previous accomplishments. Contrary to that, chronologically later art informel and different variants of self-reflexive modernist abstraction, which became the mainstream modernist art production in Yugoslavia, were still determined according to current events in Paris. They were synchronous to Paris events, true, but this synchronicity confirmed them as part of modernist project, but also positioned them marginally within the hegemonic Western canon. Episode 3. The seeds of freedom bear the fruit of democracy. The seeds of freedom bear the fruit of democracy was the motto of the American Pavilion and the International Autumn Zagreb Fair in 1957. And those pavilions were built very hastily and the fair opened in 56. The American exhibition at the fair was guided by the idea that material progress depends on the productivity that flourishes in a society that rewards substantial progress by higher personal income. A turn in Yugoslav foreign politics after the breakup with Stalin in the 50s encouraged American propaganda plans. The American communist ally, as the USA called Yugoslavia, opened its doors to Western influences that had an impact on the entire society. America was important also for painter Edo Murtić, who apparently, with the support of Yugoslav state in 1951, went on a study trip in USA and Canada. This is still the fair in Zagreb. This is Murtić, the painter. He came back and painted the painterly series Impressions of America, and this is one example. And the paintings he produced on that study trip have often been read as historical denouncing of the theory of socialist realism and of the spreading of the idea of freedom in socialism orchestrated by the party, who apparently sent him to US, which is kind of a rumor which was never properly verified. Obviously, these paintings were easier to accept than ideas of Exit 51. By the end of the 50s, different forms of gestural abstraction will become the officially accepted form of art expression. And as art historian Ljiljana Kolešnik argues, the extreme tensions between the representatives of neoconstructivism and gestural self-reflexive abstraction will for long crucially configure debates on art. But in 1957, Cold War was mostly directly led in Novi Zagreb, area where the fair was located. The American Pavilion at the International Fair in 57 represented a supermarket, which with accompanying films. There were washing machines, and one entrepreneurially minded local company suggested their detergents to go with it. There were demonstrations of how toaster, refrigerator, an electric oven, and iron work. Cigarette machines, candles, and handkerchiefs demonstrated consumption and abundance. And Yugoslav leadership duly acknowledged the need to satisfy consumer desires. On the same historic Congress of the party in 1958, in which struggle against Stalinism got one of its most optimistic proclamations, in the words of Edward Kardel, who said, "Nothing that is made should be as holy so that it cannot be overcome and replaced by something more progressive, more free, and more human." On that same Congress, the party also issued its program that announced more comfortable life, better services and goods, and that argued for ownership of consumer goods and care for everyday needs, leisure, and entertainment. The rise of consumerism is in its special socialist version, theoretician Branislav Dimitrijevic describes as ambivalent social symptom that is treated both as reproduction of capitalist imagination and as an aspect of socialist development. He claims that consumerism was a dream or hallucination to which Yugoslav society aspired, but whose representative values also instigated desires that Yugoslav society tried to satisfy. And obviously, this process ran parallel to the rise of ruling classes, which, as Darko Suvin describes it, individually did not own means of production, but collectively possessed them all. Episode 4, Agonizing Reappraisal. But hallucinatory unutopia of consumerism still kept its link to Stalinist ghosts. This episode would illustrate shortly one of its convulsions. The shock of Stalin's attempt to include Yugoslavia under his rule forced the Yugoslav party from moral and material and political reasons to radically investigate causes of Stalinism. In the period of breakup with Stalinist doctrine, in the last segment of the clash on the left from 1949 to 52, socialist intelligentsia played an important role in understanding its own Stalinist essence. Lasić writes on desperate attempts to save synthesis of art and revolution to which all protagonists of the clash aimed, no matter of their relative positions in that clash. Because art without the revolution is meaningless, just like the revolution without art is not complete. In his famous speech at the Congress of Writers held in Ljubljana in 1952, Miroslav Krleža defends autonomy of art against its political utilitarianism, just like he did in previous decades. And just like before, he is against autonomous orientation of art because, as Lasić writes, this orientation in itself has no deeper meaning for us. To our civilization of robbed and oppressed, it cannot say anything. And objectively for us, it means a right-wing orientation. Another protagonist of that late stage of getting rid of socialist realism is a writer, Erwin Schinkel, who was the best theoretician of socialist realism, and there were very few. It was mostly about agitation and propaganda. Few years later, he will write that he lived through the bloody Stalinist lie already in Moscow in 1935. But at the moment we are talking about, nobody knew that. But in this period, his novels, written in the tradition of realism, but without so-called socialist romanticism and positive heroes, which were demands of socialist realism in literature, he just didn't follow it, and for this he happened to be fiercely attacked. Theoretician of socialist realism who knew about the purges, Stalinist criticized by Stalinists, from the position of the same paranoid fears that some two decades later will attack so-called black film for misinterpreting socialist reality. Incidentally, his novel Optimists, and what a title, will be used as the story for Dasha Major's experimental feature film The Agitators, made in Bela Balazs' studio in 1969, made after the Prague Spring to say something on the Hungarian 1956 revolution through the story of the short-lived Hungarian Soviet Republic of 1919, described in Schinkel novel. The case of Erwin Schinkel exhausts itself in its complexities, and it perfectly illustrates some of the antinomies of European intellectuals in the time of the Third International. As Lasic writes, he knows and does not know what he lived through. Episode 5, the last one. Who legitimizes us as art? We brought our legitimization with us from Ljubljana, but what do the people have to say about that? It is a quote from a conversation between partisan artists held in 1944 in Slovenian Art Club, for which Miklavs Komelj, Slovenian writer, the most engaged with partisan politics, argues, as for the case of the same auto-problematizing that was so significant for the historical avant-garde, a case of subverting the ruling symbolic foundations. He writes, "The very fact that the masses took up symbolic production indicated a shift in the definition of art. Yet, we should not see this as a shift towards a cheap democratization of art. The new participation of the masses in artistic production did not mean that everything could be accepted as art, but on the contrary, that the very definition of art had been problematized, starting with everything that was figured as self-evident before the war. And this new criterion implied new self-criticism as well. Within the partisan movement emerged an enormous symbolic production by the masses. People who had never been concerned with art suddenly started to write poems, short plays and stories, also to draw and act in public manifestations, and this production was systematically supported by the partisan political leadership. The awakening of all these new talents was recognized as an unquestionable political and artistic event. The very fact that the masses took up organized symbolic production meant that the impossible became possible, as it were. From that perspective, the implementation of socialist realism was degrading to both art and the revolution itself, and the lessons learned with intense encounter of art and direct political engagement played a role in dismantling of socialist realism. What I hope we can glimpse from these episodes is how art could play in a revolutionized social field in which merging of communism and democracy could and should have happened. Thank you.